Continuing our study tonight in James chapter 3, this chapter that teaches us so much about our tongues and the nature of them, and also what is possible in terms of how we can grow and ultimately with God's help that we can bridle our tongues and that we can spiritually reach completion so that we can bridle our tongues and our whole body. And this is a continuation of what we've seen up to this point, just to remind ourselves a little bit of some of the main points that we've already seen in the book of James about this. We know the book of James begins with that encouragement to count it all joy when we fall into divers temptations, knowing that the trying of our faith works patience, and then what that patience will produce when it has its perfect work. What is the ultimate goal for us spiritually while we're here, while we're on earth? And that is so that we can be in the image of Christ, complete in it, to be complete and entire and lacking nothing spiritually. So there's he sets that goal out for us at the beginning of the chapter of the book, and which is in chapter 1, of course. And by the end of chapter 1, he is encouraging us to look in the mirror, the spiritual mirror, which God's word is, look at ourselves, which is part of that that necessary process for us to be able to change, to grow, in order to see what needs to be changed, and to cooperate, yield ourselves to God for Him to do that work in us. But we have our part there that is going to include that seeking and searching and looking in the mirror to see how we can better be doers of the word and not only hearers of it, to the point where we saw in verse 26 of chapter 1, if we are not doers of the word, to what extent? Well, he said there, if any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Well, it's a type of religion, seems to be religious. It is a type of religion, a vain kind of religion, if we don't do God's word. How much of it? All the way to the point of bridling our tongues. So if our tongues are not bridled, what does he plainly tell us our religion is? Vain. And if we've spent, and we're all religious people right here. I mean, we're among the most religious people that exist. Well, we better be. But if we, as religious as we are, if we don't get control to bridle our tongues, then in the end, all of this religion is going to be in vain for us. So that's why this is such an important job that we have, and it's a difficult one. When we're able to gain control of our tongue so that we do not cause any to trip by our words, which is the word that he used there in verse James chapter 3 and verse 2, if we reach that point, if we grow to that point, the same, he says, is a perfect man, which is that goal from the beginning of chapter 1. And what are we able to do then? So he's describing when our tongue is bridled, what is also going to be bridled at that point, the whole body. That's the goal, to be perfect and entire, lacking nothing, and as an extension of that, to then have our tongues and our entire body bridled. Well, then what kind of religion are we practicing? That's that pure and undefiled religion before God, not the vain religion. So this is all necessary, building upon that encouragement for us to grow spiritually. Because if we remain in our natural state, if we just drift along when we become a person who has understanding of right and wrong, and we sometimes refer to that as being responsible for our actions. Well, whenever we get to that point where we can understand and be held accountable for the choices we make by God, at whatever age that is in our youth, from that point onward, what are we like spiritually? There may be some good things there, but there's a lot that isn't. And that's why we have to grow spiritually, because if we don't, what's the problem that we have, the source of whatever it is that doesn't work God's righteousness, to use another term from James chapter 1 that we saw in verse 20, whatever doesn't work the righteousness of God needs to be purged out of us. But where do those things come from? Whatever is in us, good or bad, where is it? I mean, that's our heart. So that's where the work is. That's where the work has to be done. And it's from the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. And we've spent a lot of time looking at passages on that subject in our study of James 3, as we know. So this is really just reviewing what we've already looked at get us set up for our moving forward in verses 7 and 8 here in just a minute, Lord willing. But we recognize that the heart, from what the Lord teaches, that the heart is the source of what we do, say, and think. And it's from the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. From our hearts proceed our thoughts and all of our deeds. But if there's anything in our hearts that isn't good, even if it's not manifest in every action we take, if there is something in us that's not good, where can we just about guarantee that it will be manifest? If there's any problem we have in our hearts, it's going to be manifest by our tongues, isn't it? I mean, at the very least, maybe we'll get into some other kinds of trouble too, but How many problems can we have in the heart that's not going to have in some way be revealed through what the words that we speak? Just for one of the things that he pointed out in chapter 1 in 19 and 20, where we were just using the reminding ourselves of that term that's in verse 20 about what doesn't work the righteousness of God, and what example was it there in James 1:20? What does not work the righteousness of God? The anger of man. And so he told us to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Well, there in that James 1:19, where if we're angry, even if we don't put our fist through a wall or something foolish like that, or throw something, break something, and people do things like that, and we may have done something like that in our past, we would certainly hope we don't do that kind of thing anymore. But even if we restrain if we're able to restrain some of those actions and not do something destructive with our hands or something like that, what's the real key thing? If we've got anger, I mean, how's that going to be revealed for sure? Almost always. About the words that we speak. There's even a song about that, isn't there, Glenn? We sing it in our book. What's it called? Angry Words. Because if we're angry, I mean, we're going to have angry words. So if we got anger in our hearts, it's going to come out there. I mean, and that's just an example. That's why I said be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. It's going to be very difficult for us to not have some problem in our hearts to be revealed through our tongues. That's his point here, and why this job is so difficult but important. But he is showing us what is at the base where we start. And if we don't if we don't seek the Lord and we're not growing, giving all diligence so that we can be seeking to be in the image of Christ and diligently seeking in His Word to learn more of His nature and to look at ourselves there, to purge out the things that aren't good from our hearts. If we're not very zealous and diligent in that work, our tongues are going to remain a problem, and our religion will remain vain. That's where we see this description of the nature of the tongue. But when he's talking about the nature of the tongue, he's talking really about the nature of what? The heart that's behind it. It's a small member, as we have seen, our tongues are, but how much trouble can it produce and cause? A lot. Sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. That's how we finish verse 6. So that's where we're heading if we don't bridle it. Couldn't be more plain, could he? I mean, he told us in James 1:26 that our religion is vain if we don't bridle our tongues. Well, now he's telling us plainly what that's going to mean. If we don't have our tongues bridled and it's continuing to produce that evil, we're going to answer on Judgment Day, and we're going to lose our souls, and we're going to be in Gehenna. So we spent last week really studying about that word. That was a good opportunity to do that. But now we move forward into verses 7 and 8, where he is again showing, okay, this tongue is little. Look at all the big things it does, and ends up having great control over our entire selves. And how difficult is it to control? Well, verses 7 and 8, James 3, 7 and 8. He says, "For every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea." And by the way, we're not going to go through a lengthy word study of all of those, but those words are translated spot on, accurately. The Lord is giving a summary, really, of it lines up pretty well with Genesis 1. With all the different living things that there are, so we've got the animals of the land and birds that fly, the serpents and things in the sea. Well, that doesn't leave much out, does it? Except for maybe insects, because I don't know how do you tame an insect. They're not trainable, but pretty much any of these other things. What does he say about all those things? He says every one of these things is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. It's true. And people have some strange pets. I know the old saying about if you live in a glass house, don't throw stones. So, yeah, I got some strange ones too. I think Jim and Kayla do too. they may, some of these creatures may be tame, but he says, what about our, in comparison, what about our tongues? He says, but the tongue can no man tame. That word tame, that's exactly what the word means, by the way. If you look it up, I mean, that's what the word is. It's only used 4 times in the New Testament, that word tame right there. Twice in verse 7, once in verse 8. So 3 out of the 4 times the word's found in the scriptures is in these verses that we've just read, James 3, 7, and 8. There's one other time it's used, which is interesting, in Mark 5, verse 4, about those ones in the tombs that that had a legion of devils in them that Jesus cast out. But what was their state before the devils, that legion, was cast out and went into the swine? Well, Mark 5, verse 4, Well, we'll start in Mark 5. We'll start in verse 1 so we can get the context. And it says, "And they came over unto the other side of the sea and into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains." We know from parallel passages there were two of these men there. Not just one. He doesn't say there was only one here, but he's focusing on one of the two here. But we do know there was another one also there. But he says in verse 4, "Because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces, neither could any man tame him." So it's kind of interesting. This is the one other place where we read about something untamable. And he says, "Our tongues are untamable." So, I mean, kind of, do you get the picture or the image from that? So here's something that's untamable. I mean, it's wild. Well, how wild are our tongues if we don't grow in the image of Christ? It's destructive, set on the fire of hell. And he says, no man can tame that. Well, no man can. Is there a difference between something being tamed and bridled? I don't know if there's much of a difference there. But man can't tame the tongue. Can the tongue be bridled? It sure can. Now, can we do that? Can we do that work on our own? No, we cannot do that work on our own, all by ourselves. That's too big a job. Look how powerful that tongue is. Well, when we are, for us to grow spiritually, for our hearts to be purged of all things that don't work God's righteousness and to be formed in all the parts of the love of God. Well, that's the clay. Well, who's the potter? God is the potter. Now, is God going to, if we don't cooperate with God, do we have a part in this? We certainly do. We've seen it, and that's what all of these teachings are reminding us of or grounding us in, encouraging us in, seeing what our part is. We have to count it all joy when we fall into the divers temptations. And we've got to resist temptation. We've got to look into the mirror of His Word, seek Him. So there's all those aspects of what our part is in seeking the Lord to present us as clay that He can work on. If we don't care, if we have no interest in the Lord's work in our hearts, or if we're very casual about it and it's a small part of our existence or our priorities, if it's just one part of our lives that we've got the little religious part of us, if that's the way we are, then how much is God going to be able to accomplish with us then? If we go look in the mirror once a month, well, I mean, how would that work physically? You see some people that kind of look like they might not have, but. you know, that's not a recipe for success, but certainly not spiritually. So the Lord is certainly the potter, and He's the one that has to form our hearts. And but we've got our part in that, a big part in that, and we have to yield ourselves to Him. We have to give Him something to work with. We've got to do our part there. With the tongue, we're not going to be able to do that on our own. And we have lots of scriptures about that. I mean, John 15 and verse 5, what does he say we can do without Christ? Without me, you can do nothing, he said. Now, we all know Philippians 4:13. What can we do through his strength, through Christ who strengthens us? All things. So we can go from nothing to all things. And what's the difference there? Whether he is whether he's working in us. So we can't do it on our own. That'll get us nowhere. But we're not going to be able to, certainly not going to be able to tame or bridle our tongues without him. But with him and through his strength, well, this job looks big. I mean, here, look at this. Look, that's that little tongue and all the damage it can do, how unruly it is. But we don't need to throw up our hands and say, well, that's just too big a job, can't be done. Well, we're not on our own. And what does he tell us? That he, what can he do concerning what we are able to think or ask? You remember Ephesians 3:20? He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. What can we ask or think about having our tongues bridled? He's teaching us to. And can he do exceedingly abundantly above all that we could ask or think in regard to this work to form our hearts so that our tongues and our whole body can be bridled? And that's the actual context of Ephesians 3, where he says that. It's about us to being able to know the love of Christ, its length and breadth and depth and height, to be filled with all the fullness of God. And if that happens, is our tongue going to be bridled? Are we going to have our whole bodies bridled? That's the point. That's the same goal that James is teaching us, and right here in chapter 3. And he's able to do that. So where can we say, nah, that's beyond what's possible? Well, what did we just study about Sunday night? Last time we were in here, David and Goliath. I mean, David, he went and saw that giant over 9 feet tall, who was an experienced warrior, which he was not. He had no experience. He's young. He's a shepherd, but he wasn't going there on his own. He would have had no more success. David would have had no more success in fighting Goliath on his own without the Lord than we would trying to bridle our tongues or tame it on our own. Correct? But when he went in the name of the Lord, with the Lord's strength with him, that in his faith that was in action there, and what an opportunity to show his faith by his works. The Lord told him not to be afraid, and the Lord promised deliverance over his enemies. Nobody else was believing that. Nobody else was going down there to face Goliath. If he didn't really believe that, when he gets down there and getting closer and closer to that giant, no armor on, just that sling and 5 stones, and there he is now within his range and sees him. I mean, that is a faith in action, because if he didn't really believe, is he going to keep walking, stepping towards that giant like he did? He had to be fully persuaded, and he was. But his trust was in the Lord, as we saw what his words were at that time. That the battle was the Lord's. Well, the battle is the Lord's for us. That's why we have been told about that. That's why we've been told about all those other great victories that God gave to the ones who believed in him. That's why we have Hebrews chapter 11 that has that great cloud of witnesses, and David being mentioned there, of course, and all those ones that the Lord did those wondrous things with, and who, as he said in Hebrews 11:33, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in flight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. All of those things. Well, who really did all of those things? It was God doing that with these ones who had their faith in him and were obeying his commandments. Exactly what we've been taught to do here in the book of James. Well, now we're looking at what's possible here. So we read about those ones in the Old Testament, all those enemies they defeated, and those great things that were done by the by those examples of faith. What could be said of us one day? And he bridled his tongue. What would be, think of, in one sense, what would be a greater victory, to slay Goliath or bridle your tongue? I mean, this is a spiritual battle for us, not a physical one. And this work in our hearts and overcoming all those temptations is the spiritual battle that we're in, and that growth process. But in the end, that's what the Lord would have said of all of us, that through faith, and each one of our names should be able to be inserted there, through faith that we have done the Lord's will and by his strength bridled our tongues and our whole bodies and grew in the image of Christ. That should be what is the epitaph for our life one day, when we go to eternity. I mean, if the Lord were to write our obituary for us, wouldn't we want that be said? Now, some people have those big, long ones, and it's full of all these things they did in this life, all these worldly accomplishments. In the end, what's all that going to amount to? But if the Lord can say of us, this was my servant, and he or she, with all diligence, sought me and did my will, and I've formed them complete in the image of my Son, and now I have a vessel unto honor, meet for my use for eternity. I mean, what more can we ask for? And that's what's possible here. And that will be, and a big part of that is getting our, having our tongues bridled. But when he speaks about those all those animals that have been tamed, and then says in verse 8 of James 3 that the tongue can no man tame it, is, he says it's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Well, that's the nature. I mean, that means, where's that that unruly evil and that deadly poison that's comes out of our tongues? That's what's in our hearts. And if we're not growing spiritually like we should, we're going to have some of that. And how much of it is, how much of it does it take to send us to hell? Well, if any part of it is, we got any part of that in our hearts that's coming out of our mouths, then that's, our tongues aren't bridled and our religion's vain. So we can't afford to have any of that. But that's showing us how powerful the tongue is and how much evil it produces from the hearts, from the evil that's in the hearts of men, including ours, in our past and while we're growing, there's still things we're working on, but we've got to keep at it so that we can reach that goal one day. But we can't take a day off in that pursuit. He then is going to demonstrate this in verse 10. Where he says, out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. So that's his example of the deadly poison. It's interesting, those words at the end of verse 8, unruly evil, that word unruly, it means literally unrestrainable. That's the only place it's found in the New Testament, that word. But it means that. That word evil is the word kakos, which it means bad. It's one of the common words for evil in the Greek in the New Testament. Full of deadly poison. That's literally what that is. That word, those are words that are rarely used elsewhere, but those are very accurately translated words describing the nature of our tongues when we don't have those things purged out of our hearts. And so what happens? Well, that evil is there. Now we might start trying to make ourselves feel a little better about ourselves and get the rationalization game going. And well, yeah, I don't just say bad stuff all the time. I say good things too. Well, that's what he says in verse 10. Out of the same mouth, if we're trying to console ourselves and convince ourselves that we're all right just like we are, well, what does he say? Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing, good and bad. Does he say that's okay, just make sure you got more of the good than the bad? That's not it. There's not some scaled away it and we're just looking at, oh, I hope I've got just a little more good there than the bad. That's not what he's teaching there. There should not be good and evil coming out of our mouths, which means there should not be good and evil where? That shouldn't be in our hearts. Now, until we're complete in the love of God, until we're fully conformed to the image of Christ, there is going to be some mixture there. That's the whole growth process, is purging the evil out more and more and more and more, so we have less and less of that blend or that mixture of good and evil there. And so over time, as we're growing, as more of the evil is being purged out of our hearts, as more of what is the parts of the love of God being formed in there, how's that going to be manifest in our tongues? Will we be speaking more good? As he says, using the words of Ephesians 4:29, will we be speaking less corrupt things and more of what is good to the use of edifying others? We'll be doing, the more we're growing in Christ, the more of the good, the less of the corrupt, the evil. But where can we say on that line of growth in Christ that, okay, even though there's still some bad there, I've got enough good now where I'm all right? What does Ephesians 4:29 say? Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying. So how much corrupt evil is the Lord okay with coming out of our mouths, meaning that that's in our hearts? None. So we've got to keep at it until it's bridled, until we are the complete man and able to bridle the whole body. That's the goal. And so he's showing what that will look like when there's a mixture in our hearts of good and evil treasure. And so that's what he's describing, where we, to some extent, where we all are in our spiritual growth process. But over time, we need to keep growing more and more. And as the Lord is, and we sing that song, he's still working on me. I mean, we're not finished yet. But we got to look at what finished, this is, we need to see the picture of what finished looks like. And then give all that we got to get there. And the Lord can get us there. He's able to do that. So while we are, just to remind ourselves again, these are some verses that we've read with the tongue, but taking another glance back at Luke chapter 6 on this, when he's describing the heart in terms of its treasure and the fruit it produces. Verse 43 of Luke 6 says, "For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit." Well, here's this teaching about trees and fruit. What is that talking about? Verse 44, "For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes." Well, this isn't a lecture on horticulture that he's given here. Verse 45, I mean, it applies. I mean, he's taking some true statements from nature to apply it to what we need to understand here spiritually. So some physical examples to help us to understand the spiritual point that he's making. But all of us have grown something at some point. If you plant the seed, it's just like what God established in Genesis 1. Every seed produces after his kind. I mean, we don't plant, unless they've mislabeled the thing. When we plant a seed, whatever plant you're planting there, I mean, Dave plants those peppers up there in Bethune. What else you plant in? What else you grow up there?
Tomatoes.
And I don't think squash. I mean, I don't think you've ever planted a squash plant and anything but a squash grow off of that. And same with tomato. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, the very first tomato plant produced tomatoes, and every tomato plant between that and now has produced tomatoes, still does, nothing else. Every seed produces after its kind. It continues to do that. You don't get anything else from it. Well, that's the way it should be with our hearts. And that's the tree and fruit analogy that he's making, because when he says in verse 45, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. So what's the tree there? It's the heart. And the fruit is what is produced from it. And if we're good, we're going to have good treasure in our heart and bring forth that which is good. That good tree will produce the good fruit. And he says, an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. And then he says again, for of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. Now the reality is, for us spiritually, between the point where we started our race and were we 100% evil at that point, or was there any good in us at all when we started? Yes. But there was a lot that wasn't. And whatever we were like at that beginning point when we were born again of the water and of the Spirit, started our race as a Christian to now, there has been some mixture and treasure in our hearts, and so we've not yet had this tree that produces only the good fruit that it should. Now that's what he's pointing out as the goal there in Luke 6, just like he is pointing that out as the goal in James 3, but he's using very similar language as when he says in James 3 verse 10 about our mouths. He says, out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. A good tree shouldn't be bringing forth corrupt fruit. We should not be satisfied with that at all. That should be unacceptable to us. It's unacceptable to the Lord, and it should be unacceptable to us. These things ought not so to be. The Lord is not pleased with our having a mixture of words that come out of our mouths from due to that mixture in our hearts. What is he desiring? All of that that evil to be purged out, and all that is good to be formed in there. He asks the question in James 3 verse 11, doth the fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? So he's using so many of the same points that he did there in Luke 6 that we looked at. In reality, whether it's a fountain of waters or whether it is a tree with its fruits, it should only produce one kind. And the Lord is showing us how it is necessary then for our hearts as that tree, that it would only produce good fruit and not corrupt fruit at the same time. And so that's actually how he concludes the direct teaching on the tongue from verses 1 through 12. The remainder of the chapter is going to be application of that, but also really showing us some of these different fruits that he's going to describe from the standpoint of wisdom. So he's going to go back to something he also started with in chapter 1 and James 1 and verse 5, as we should recall when he was teaching us about that goal, that spiritual goal that we have, to be complete and entire, lacking nothing. And then verse 5, he says, but if any of you lack wisdom. So he immediately got to a specific entity that we might be lacking in, and a major one, wisdom. Well, he's going to be talking about this wisdom of God as opposed to the devilish wisdom. So there's going to be the good and the corrupt that he's going to be talking about in terms of wisdom from verses 13 to 18, and teaching us to have none of that devilish wisdom, but only to have that wisdom that is from above, from God. So that's why we need to not lack wisdom. We need all of this good, and that is going to be very much involved in our growth process, so that we can have a tongue that's bridled and also bridle our whole body. So what's coming up in these next few verses of James 3, even though he's not going to be directly talking about the tongue in the way that he has in, down through verse 12, it's going to be the same teaching as far as teaching us about the difference between what is good and evil, and how we need to pursue the good from God and purge out the evil. That's what causes us trouble with our tongues. So we're going to have more of that coming there. But we see here these several verses where he's showing us that we can't have this blend or this mixture there and be and have the Lord to be pleased with that. We can't have good things and evil things coming out of our mouths, some of both, and have the Lord's favor for that. We need to only have what is good there. Now, back in Luke chapter 11, if we can go back to the book of Luke and to chapter 11 this time. Verses 34 to 36, it's another passage that's teaching the same principle, but now here in terms of light versus darkness. He says, the light of the body is the eye. Therefore, when thine eye is single, thy whole body also is full of light. But when thine eye is evil, thy body it also is full of darkness. Take heed, brethren, that the light which is in thee be not darkness. If thy whole body, therefore, be full of light, having no part dark, the whole shall be full of light, as when the bright shining of a candle doth give thee light. Now, this is right in line with what he's teaching us here in James 3, what we also saw in Luke chapter 6. What's in our inner man? Now here, whether he's talking about fruits, good or corrupt fruits, or water, sweet and bitter, here he's talking about light versus darkness. But this is all the same point. The analogy is the same. How much of a mixture can we have there? And this is the growth process. Well, we need to have how much light and how much darkness? He says, if thy whole body therefore be full of light, having no part dark. That's the goal. So what do we do with the dark that's there, the evil that's there in our hearts? Well, we've got to purge that out. And we've got a lot of a lot of places, of course, where he commands us to do that particular work. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 20, he says, "But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use and prepared unto every good work. Flee also youthful lust, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace, within the call on the Lord out of a pure heart." So he is talking about our hearts there. But what these things that are a product, the evil things that are a product of those evil desires, what does he say that we have to do with those things in order to be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use and prepared unto every good work? Purge ourselves. If a man purge himself, do we have a part in purging out those things that don't work God's righteousness from our hearts? Well, he's telling us to do it right there. Of course, he also tells us this in 1 John in chapter 3. Verses 1 through 3. He says, "Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us." Look at the manner of love that God has bestowed on us. How much does God love us? How great is that love? He says that we should be called the sons of God. Now, how much love does he have for us that he's willing to adopt us as his children and call us his children? Especially considering what we did. That is a wonderful love. And it's a manner of love that we do need to behold and consider, that he's willing to do that. And he says, "Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. We are now his children." And he says, "And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." So there's that hope of the resurrection that he's talking about there. We don't know what that looks like yet, but that's what we'll be, and that's what we have our hope for based in the resurrection of Christ. And so in verse 3 says, "And every man that has this hope in him purifieth himself." There's that word. It's translated cleanse or purge. But he says, everyone that has this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. See, there's the goal. For us to be pure in heart like Christ is. For that to happen, there are things that we've got to purge out. Now, who does he put the responsibility on there for that in verse 3? He says, purifieth himself, just like he said, purge himself there in 2 Timothy chapter 2. So we've got plenty of verses that show us that we've got our part in that. That's why we have to look in the mirror. Are we going to know what needs to be purged out if we're not looking in the mirror to see how he is pure and then to see how we're not and what needs to change so that we can be pure as he is? We're not going to know what needs to be changed in us without looking in the mirror of his word. So we've got to go there. We've got to study and learn more about the heart of Christ, and also at the same time be learning about our own hearts as we examine ourselves with that measure or that standard that he gives us there. And then we need to do our part in our work in purging out those things that are not of his nature, so we can be pure like him. Well, in 1 John chapter 1, we're not doing this alone. We can see that we have responsibility there, but once again, as we've already mentioned tonight, we cannot do this. We cannot tame or bridle our tongues by ourselves. We can't just, by our own power, make that happen. but with the Lord's strength we can. So in verse 9, 1 John 1, 9, he says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us. That's that word again, for purging. From all unrighteousness. Now, who's doing the work there? He is. So then we could say, well, is it us or him? Which is, what's the obvious answer? It's not a choice of either or. We can see the description of God's work. He's ultimately the one that has to do that, but we've got our part in it. Just like if you read those early chapters in the book of Exodus and about Pharaoh, and several times it's Pharaoh hardened his heart, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. Well, who was involved there? Pharaoh and God. And by the way, is God going to harden the heart of a person that is seeking the Lord and trying to do the Lord's will? Most certainly not. But somebody who, using Pharaoh's own words, who is the Lord that I should obey him? Now, if somebody has that kind of heart, and the Lord was enduring him this vessel of wrath fitted to destruction, so God was doing certain things there to make sure he was going to have the opportunity to pour out all those plagues and manifest himself to the world. But for those that are his children, that are seeking him, we've got to work on purging ourselves, but that's where we are presenting ourselves and yielding ourselves to God, who is the ultimate potter over our clay, to form it that way. And so we can see that God is going to be the one to be doing that work, and that's what he does in all of his children, all Christians. Acts chapter 15 and verse 9. This was a truth that was recognized here concerning with this report of what this was the Apostle Peter reporting with the conversion of the Gentiles and what was happening there. Peter said in verse 9 of Acts 15 concerning God, because he says, and God in verse 8, verse 9, put no difference between us and them, between Jew and Gentile, purifying their hearts by faith. Now, what was the work that Peter describes there that shows that God was put no difference between Jew and Gentile? That he had the same work for all, and that is to purify, to purge, cleanse their hearts by faith. That's God's ultimate work to do with all of us. That's the work we have to do. So that we can have our tongues bridled and our whole bodies bridled. All right, we're out of time for tonight. So Lord willing, we'll continue in our study in James 3 next Wednesday night.